This is the EWN Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Empowering Motherhood Radio. I'm Tara Darlington, here to shine the light for you on your journey. Now, you've probably heard lots of talk about superfoods. It seems to be everywhere right now. You can even, you know, it's become into the mainstream conversation when you can pick it up at your local supermarket. But what we have today is Shakti Grace, who is known as the Holistic Chef, who comes from a very high end, the very high end of chefing, and has integrated not just superfoods, but a really holistic, organic, clean healing into this beautiful level of chefing. And I've just said to her, I need some lessons because while I am pretty good, my kids are complaining that my food's getting a bit boring. So we'll talk about that later. So welcome to the show. And please tell us a little bit about your journey, how, you know, your chefing journey and how you came to being so passionate about organic, clean superfoods.
Thank you, Tara, so much for having me on today. Wow, it's such an honour and such a pleasure. How did I come to superfoods? Well, I started cooking when I was about 30, to give you a bit of a synopsis of me. I started cooking when I was about 30 after living overseas the first time. And I went back to school, went to TAFE, and then I ended up in high-end catering in Sydney. And lo and behold, I started working on a yacht for quite a well-known man. And that sort of launched me into, like, cooking and a career for 14 years abroad on yachts and in the States. And that was traditional food, just whatever the client kind of wanted. But after that, 14 years later, I ended up back in Australia and I kind of did a rock and roll tour and it kind of burnt me out. And I said, I can't do this anymore working for people. And I literally kind of, I found spirulina. And next thing you know, I kind of launched into this journey of investigating what these supposedly called superfoods meant. And it just sort of, I think I refer to it as like it was a download from somewhere else that came through me, and I created this this blend of superfoods, and that then sort of catapulted me after many years in yoga ashrams and places like that and healer, working with healers, into kind of understanding more about the frequency of foods and how to actually incorporate traditional methods into cookery and to create food that isn't just tasty and delicious, but is also sort of a higher frequency food and food that is better for you based on the way it's cooked and the way it's prepared, the love it's given, and also then the inherent ingredients. So
what's fascinating. I want you to tell us a bit more about the frequency of food. But you know, when you're saying about the love, you know, I love that book, Like Water for Chocolate, and it's all about the love and emotion that goes into it. It's one of my favorite books. You know, about the love and the emotion, the whole story of their life living through the food. So it really can be such an integral, it is an integral part of our life that sometimes we disconnect from. So talk to us a little bit what you mean when you say, I mean, I know what you mean, but just explain it a little bit, the frequency of food. I love that, looking at it that way.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, for me, and again, I can only speak from my own experience and the experience of people that I've admired and worked with and teachers, mainly elders. So for me, the way I could share that with you is I had an Aboriginal elder teacher that passed last year, and he used to tell me about the way he would communicate with the plants before he would make his medicines for healing. And I think it's the same with the superfoods or any food, really, is that everything, including us, we all have a frequency or a vibration that we operate at. And when we're happier, in love or in joy, we feel better. We can feel our frequency lifting. And when we're working with food or working with anything at all, playing really, because this is all just a game, this sort of hologram of life, we're working with the frequency of these foods. So to me, it is about sort of capturing that and becoming symbiotic with that. So knowing that when we, you know, go to our garden and pick our plants, he used to say to me, talk to the plants, tell them what you're doing, tell them the medicine that you're going to make, you know, whether you're picking some thyme and making a beautiful oil to put in your dressing, you know, this is a frequency, tell the plants that, and they will respond to that. And I think it's the same. We respond to others with our frequency. And so all of this is like an alchemy of sorts, and we're working with these foods to create something. So then when we imbue it with love, like in like Water for Chocolate, it changes the frequency of the food. So it's also almost like a yogic perspective, you know. When you're in the ashrams, they sing while they're making our food, and they're constantly imbuing it with the love and the appreciation of the Mother Earth, you know, and then in giving it the love, so then when we imbue or imbibe the food, eat the food, it's full of that. So when we eat organic or local or sustainable or homegrown, ideally, food, it's all full of those frequencies, and then that is going into our bodies, and then that's obviously going to reflect in the way that we process that food. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, which also leads on to just that, you know, simple gratitude prayer before eating, isn't it? Doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, when I talk at expos, I often, you know, bring that stuff in. And that's why, again, in ashrams or any of those kind of traditions, the indigenous traditions, the Native Americans, they all pray over their food. They all bless their food. They give thanks. And the food, again, frequency, it will respond to that element that you give it. So it's all of these energetic things that just respond into the way that we approach it. So when we eat food that is full of those frequencies, it comes into us. And when we eat food that's what they would say in yoga or Ayurveda is tamasic or dead, it won't have any life force available to it. So it won't have any life force for us, essentially.
Yes, that's right. And so when we eat lots of that stuff, then we lose our life force, start to become lethargic and, you know, lazy and sluggish and all those sort of things, because that it's a very heavy vibration, as you were talking before, that, you know, when that food doesn't have that energy. So people tend to become, when they do consume a lot of that, I mean, you know, you can barely call it food, but that's another discussion, you know, what your definition of food is. But, and that is the result. And I think people know that's the result. They might get an initial sugar hit and that sort of energy from, that's why those foods also have a high amount of sugar in them, isn't it? Processed sugar, because otherwise you just don't feel, you know, anything from it. Whereas when you eat nice and clean, and that's another word that's becoming more and more in the mainstream conversation, you know, clean living. So talk a little bit about that, you know, organic food, clean living, locally produced food. So all of that's adding to, I just want to come back to the word vibration, but it's all adding to this lovely, you know, life force that the food has, doesn't it?
Well, that's right. And I mean, I think I remember when I first looked into things like spirulina, which is a microalgae, to go back a little bit there with something like, say, spirulina, if you actually look at the microscope, the very magnification, the highly magnified viewing of the spirulina in the microscope, it actually looks like DNA. So essentially you're eating something that, you know, we it's the same strands of DNA visually. So if you think about that, and then they put these sort of foods under Kielian photography, and they show the life force. So if you put something that's tamasic or old and stale and heavily processed or full of pesticides, it would have a lower, you know, response from the Kielian photography scan. Whereas you put something that's really fresh and organic and made with love as well, it will actually imbue it with a higher frequency, and therefore, it will show up when you eat it. And I think that's the thing about clean, and it's not so much that everyone has to be, you know, hardcore organic and that's all that can cross their list, because obviously it's the mainstream, the world isn't creating food for us that's easy to access anymore, whereas organic wouldn't have been used in our, you know, our mother's time, but now it would be. So I think it's about people trying to do their best to eat food that is as clean as possible and pesticide-free as possible, or at least you eat organic food that's not in the dirty dozen. You know, things like berries and stuff really do need to be organic or, you know, homegrown. And And therefore, yeah, it is clean, and it, and it's, and processed food is not clean, you know. And sugar might, yeah, as you say, give you a hit and make you feel like you're getting a sort of a vibrational buzz out of it, but actually it is essentially just the sugar, the stripped back sugar. Whereas when you're eating, you know, like a fresh, well, I green juice, I guess, not so much a kale juice, but something that's fresh from your garden, you will feel that when you eat, when you drink it, you know, you'll feel it in your body and you'll actually feel it in your cells. And those frequencies of those plants will actually then affect you in a positive way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We've just recently got the juicer back out and going, we get it in and out. you know, sometimes I put it away because it's just in my way and then it stays away for a week or two or more. But we've been going hardcore with the juicing organic, making fruit and vegetable juices. And, oh, you just, once you start that again, you just think, oh, what is that other stuff? You know, it just doesn't have the same, it's so different. You know, if you got orange juice from the fridge at the supermarket and then you, you know, cold press some oranges, you just think, oh, you know, then you really notice the difference, you know, of what's going on. And the other interesting thing is, you know, I hear a lot of people saying, oh, well, our parents didn't, you know, eat organic, which is what you were just touching on before. But it's like, no, because we didn't, you know, however many years ago, we didn't have to call everything organic because, you know, my grandmother, everything was organic.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, there is a lot more toxicity in the, I've lost you there. There is a lot more toxicity in the food now, with part of it being an attempt to, you know, make food, you know, industrialize food and, you know, make it cheaper. And I'm not at the moment, but I ran for a long time an organic co-op at our school because I'm a big believer in that locally grown organic food and that maybe we're not actually supposed to go to a supermarket and pick out one of this and two of that exactly what we want rather than, you know, what we've been given seasonally, which is brings us on to the, you know, another topic in that area of eating seasonal food.
Well, that's right. Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, so in the old days, so I think my mum would be in her 80s now. She was alive. You know, they didn't have to worry about this because the soils weren't as trashed, and there simply wasn't the volume of humans on the planet trying to access food. And I think also fads also sort of speak to that. You know, if a fad comes through, then it sort of blights the crops in whatever country that food's coming from. But, yeah, they didn't have to worry about it. But now our soils are depleted, especially in Australia. I can't remember which mineral, but it's incredibly deficient. So we do need to actually supplement ourselves often with minerals just to make up for what the soil's not giving us anymore. But it is a case of trying to eat foods or of doing our best to eat foods that are available when they're available. So not eating, you know, tropical fruits in the middle of winter in Australia. I mean, I guess, you know, some of the ones that might come from Queensland, but trying to just eat what's in front of you. So like you say, if you go to the co-op and you get your co-op box, then okay, well, what vegetables are here this week? I work with those and I don't look to create something that doesn't exist in this season at this time, which is, as you'd mentioned in the email, you know, it's that sort of where the slow food movement comes from, you know, eating the food that's available and sustainable at this time of the year. So in Australia, we're moving into the spring, so we're ending the winter vegetables, and now we're moving into the springtime vegetables. So we utilise those as opposed to sourcing things that aren't around locally in Australia. You know,
yeah, that's right. And that makes it more affordable because I know people look at organic as being expensive, but when you get an organic box, you know, that makes food affordable, in my opinion. And that's why I've been always such a strong advocate for, you know, your local co-op. And there's local co-ops everywhere. And if there's not one where you live, you can start one. they're actually quite easy to get going. It's amazing how many people are drawn to it, which brings into a lovely sense of community around food right from the beginning. My kids used to love co-op day, the boxes coming out, people coming to collect their food and the joy. You know, that high frequency would start right there with you know, harvesting and collecting the food, you know, and taking that right through to the table, which is a big passion of mine as well. And that's part of I love about what you're doing with this sort of high-end, you know, clean food eating, you know, the sitting at the table becomes also such an important feature of that, and the beautiful presentation of the food and everything.
Well, that's right. And I think, you know, if you look to, again, you know, the wisdom cultures, or, you know, what I would refer to as the wisdom cultures, like the Indigenous ones. So for me, the Native Americans, I'm sure the Australian Aboriginals, any of them. And then obviously the Europeans would be the most obvious in our Western times. It's an event. It's not something that we just rush. We throw it in our mouths and then we watch telly and then off we go, you know, or we're doing it in our car as we're driving somewhere else. They're all about the community, sitting down, drinking, you know, the local wine if they drink wine, or the, you know, so the French or the Italians, and they love the food, they love creating it, they all do it together, they pass recipes down from generations and generations of grandmothers and grandfathers, and it's an event. Each meal is an event, and your body will actually then process the food in a better way, because you're eating it with joy, you're eating it calmly, and you're eating it actually with mindfulness. You know, even if you're talking and having fun, you know, you're still mindful, you're present to what you're doing, and that all speaks to that, you know, and that's become so distant to us in the Western culture, and especially now, I think, with the social media age and the technology age, you know, for some people, food is just a byproduct of something we have to do, you know, in our day-to-day lives, and it's gone, that thing of community. So yeah, co-ops and organic, even organic food delivery, because those sort of people are really dedicated to this process and sourcing from local farms. And there's so many local farmers who may not be certified, but they're pesticide free and they're doing it with love. You know, their craft and their purpose and their passion is to create, you know, grow this food for us. You know, so we're encouraging all of that, and then creating the meal, and then sitting down with our friends and our family and our loved ones and eating it, you know. And for me, I think really with food, that's always been my dream, of having some big rambling sort of farmhouse by the ocean, and just where people can just come in and eat from that table, you know, and you're just creating stuff with love, you know, with really pure intention. And I don't think that we all have to be, you know, have rambling farmhouses or anything. But I think it comes back to the intention of what it is you're creating. And I know it's for families and mums with lots of children, because I don't have kids, but I have many friends that do, and many clients. It's like, oh, my God, I've got to create more food today, you know, because kids, I guess, are bottomless pits, which is fair enough. They're growing, but it's how to go back to having some appreciation for themselves of what they're doing and why they're creating, you know, and making it simple, but making it fun again, you know, and something that we invest time in doing, you know, and slowing down to appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's like right. That. And kids really need that, to be connected, you know, to their food, where it comes from, how it's prepared. You know, I know we go annually up to the apple orchards for the autumn apple picking every year, and the kids love it. But it's amazing, the farmer up there said, you know, you get sometimes groups from schools and they've even lost contact with the fact that an apple comes from a tree, which is really huge, I think, you know, because there are images in the apple trees in so many kids' books and things, but the actual, you know, eating the food and collecting the food is just so distant from where it comes from, and then that creates a whole different respect for the environment, and from the people who, you know, from one end all the way to the other end. It's so important, that connection to it, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I think Jamie Oliver comes to mind straight away. I don't know exactly what he's doing with the food revolution. I'm not totally up to date, but I know, like, that's been one of his things, is trying to go into schools, I mean, or into homes. I think he was doing it in America and in England, to show kids, oh, actually, this is where, you know, a chicken comes. This is what a chicken is, you know. This is what this vegetable is, because they're completely disconnected. And it's almost like we're needing to go back to basics, you know, back to the beginning, basically, you know, as it was when our parents and grandparents were were young, you know, where they had a total understanding of that. And I know we live in a faster-paced world, but I think with this encouraging people to grow, you know, herbs and things in boxes on their balconies, in, you know, people who have apartments and all of that sort of stuff, it's all about just encouraging people to have some connection of creating their own food experience, even if it is just herbs. And as you said, kids, when they are offered that connection, they really resonate, again, vibrationally, they resonate and they grab onto it, you know. You just need to present it to them. And I mean, kids, they're totally open to these experiences, you know. You just got to make it fun, and along the way they learn, and then they have an appreciation, you know. So I think it's just vital.
It is vital, because so many people, you know, there's almost it's almost at endemic proportions now, the people having trouble getting their kids to eat healthy food and to eat properly. But that connection with the food really, really makes a big difference as well. You know, and like you said, it can be something really simple, and kids love preparing food and just being involved in that whole process. And then their relationship to food is different. Like you said, there's an appreciation, there's a connection, they're creating things themselves even, and, you know, that creates a lifelong love of food. And that's something that I think in modern times we've really lost a lot. And again, like you were saying, when you look back at other cultures, they don't have as many problems with kids eating. It wasn't such a big deal, but they introduced food in such a different way to what a lot of us have been doing as we've got more disconnected.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, you know, life is just so much faster. I mean, even for me, watching it at my age now, like it's just so fast now. Like, we're just constantly bombarded, and kids now are really used to that level of hyperactivity. So it's, again, slowing it all down for them and sort of reintroducing what may seem like really foreign concepts to them. And even just to younger people, you know, teenagers, people in their early 20s, I think millennials or whatever, you know, it's just reintroducing that idea of where the food comes from. You don't have to maybe say that it's got frequency or whatever, but, you know, what happens when you eat food that's fresh or freshly harvested or made with love or made with care, and give them the empowerment to be the creators themselves as well. Because that's what, you know, you and I, you know, that's part of our purpose is, and everyone's purpose really is to help empower each other. And I guess, especially for your audience, you know, as parents, especially empowering our children to understand and then to feel connected to the food and want to create, you know, make their mum's breakfast on a Sunday, you know, even if the kitchen looks like a bomb site at the end of it, you know, with the herbs they've grown on the balcony, or, you know, like, kids love that. You know,
Yeah, my teenager comes over with her friends and I get them all cooking and we have a big lunch outside. And the interesting thing is, you know, when everyone's finished eating, we'll get up and go and do other things, and they'll sit at the table talking, you know, sometimes for an hour or two, you know, because that's that real integration of the food as well, as you were talking before, of sitting down and taking time with the food, digesting your food and enjoying, you know, honouring that whole space.
Exactly, and honouring. And I think, again, that's what it speaks to in the traditional cultures. It's all about the honouring of the food and then honouring of the family and honouring of the community. And it all comes together, and that all relates to where, you know, how the food was grown, how it was harvested, whether it's from your own garden or not, and then how it's created, the love it's given to the end result of when you all sit down together, you know, and eat, you know, even if it's in an apartment with a candle and a, you know, some nice filtered water, you know, it can be simple as, or it can be as grandiose as you want it to be. But it sort of has that, you know, that vision in your mind of just people enjoying eating, as opposed to being something that you just have to do to get through the day.
Yeah, that's right.
It's vital. And I find, even with the clients at the moment that I have with this new part of the business, they just, it's like, oh, wow, this is food like we used to eat, kind of thing. And they're, I don't know, it's almost like somehow the experience of whatever it is that I'm creating, and many other cooks or any cook is creating, it shows up when you're eating the food, even if people don't know it on a conscious level. And that to me, that's a gift. That's a gift to be able to give other people that experience, you know, and I'm passionate about that. And that's something that's really inspired me to be a cook. You know, even when I was working on yachts, at the end of the day, I'm still creating an experience for the boss.
Yeah. But, and this that's part of that. Yeah, that's what you call, that's something I talk a lot about as well, is that the ritual of it. So what you're talking about is they've had a ritual when they were young of eating at the table, nourish some food that someone's carefully prepared for them, and sitting around talking at the table. So when you've done that for them and they haven't done it for a while, that anchor rushes back. Those emotions rush back from when they were young, which is another reason it becomes a real anchor. Creating these sort of rituals in our life and creating a really healthy ritual around really healthy food. So we're going to take a quick break, and I want to come back and talk to you more about the superfoods and about the cooking that you do and the services you offer. So hold on there one sec and we'll come back in a moment.
Sure.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
So I'm here with Shakti Grace from The Holistic Chef, and we've talked a lot about, that the energy of food, of clean food, of organic food, of where you source your food, of that whole process from growing the food to, gathering at the table and that sort of the ritual of it all and connecting to it and just the healing that comes just from that alone. Let alone when it's something special and extra healthy, which is also what you do. So tell us a little bit about, your philosophy with your actual, with your cooking, because I know you make absolutely, beautiful food. Give us a little bit of insight, with the sort of food that you actually make.
Well, currently I've got a home delivery service that's local to the Central Coast where I live in New South Wales and some Sydney areas. But I also cook for people bespoke. But basically my philosophy is that at the moment it's like the slow food kind of concept, I guess. Intuitively it is. It's using sometimes some local farm team at Masters or somewhere on the coast or organic or my own garden actually. And I create one menu a week, and it's new every week, and it's a starter, a soup at the moment, a main course, and a sweet. But the difference is that there's usually some sort of herbal alchemy going on. Alchemy is a big part of my life. Alchemy simply just, taking some base ingredients in this case and creating something that's gold or golden food-wise. But I use herbs. So, for example, if I'm making a soup, like I think next week I'm going to do broccoli because broccoli is about to go out of season. Broccoli, and I'm going to add tulsi, holy basil. And holy basil is an amazing adaptogen. It's across-the-board adaptogen. So it's a really good herb for most people, but especially women, especially people with adrenal problems. So I'm not using amounts that are potent or overly medicinal or therapeutic, but it's enough to give an underlying feel to the food and affect the flavour. But it just takes, it changes the frequency, I feel. So I add in these little twists. So I think the tagline to the business is healthy food with a twist. So there's all these little twists, and I use a lot of fresh herbs in the sweets, and often they're raw, purely because of the ingredients I'm using. And then there is superfoods in inverted commas in there. And I use a lot of herbs and things to give just a different flavour note, but there's layers and layers. So you might look at the soup and go, oh, that just looks like a green broccoli soup. But there's layers and layers and layers of different sort of elements that make it. And then that hopefully shows up in the way it feels in people's bodies. It's predominantly vegetarian at the moment. And it's also using traditional techniques of cookery. So back again, like how it would have been prepared in the olden days, where, you know, say if you're using a legume, it's soaked overnight and activated and, you know, almost semi-sprouted, and it's added, you know, there's an acid medium to encourage this sort of process. And it also reduces the oligosaccharides and the things that may create gas, or the anti-nutrients in the legumes or the pulses. And then that's then cooked in, you know, homemade stocks and often in more herbs and things like that. So it's layer upon layer upon layer. And then using a lot of spices, like not necessarily spicy spices, but the Ayurvedic spices, you know, a lot of turmeric and a lot of cummins and corianders and all of those sort of things that just create a flavour thing, a flavour kind of, I can't even think of the word, just like good flavour. And it's
flavor potion.
It's a potion. It's alchemy. You know, it's that whole thing of so it's not your stock standard. Like I think this week we had vegetarian lentil shepherd's pie, but it, you know, it was kind of like these crazy flavors in there that people probably wouldn't better identify. But when they have that mouthful, they're like, oh my, wow, that's great. And so they've been telling me via text. And the top, you know, has, you know, cauliflower and different root vegetables, and then ginger when you're cooking the cauliflower. So it's just constantly infusing flavors. I kind of tend to be a bit more of a more is more kind of girl when I'm cooking. So I'm heavy-handed with flavor. I just like it to be kind of strong or intense, and that's kind of that sort of Shakti element, that name that I've been given. It's, you know, it's all about creative energy and kind of, you know, imbuing it with all of that. And so that's this is my latest project, and it's called Nourished and Nurtured. And the name sort of came, and I couldn't believe I was able to get the URL, and it was all just there and on Instagram and everything. But it actually represents exactly what it is. It's nourishing and it's nurturing, and people need nourishment and nurturing. You know, I know I
they
do.
Sure
and
do.
I know,
mm.
Yeah. And it represents that. It represents exactly what it is. And it doesn't make it complicated. You just have one choice and you can take it or leave it kind of thing. And when I cook for people, you know, my friends or for other clients, it's usually something that's a little bit different. It's got just some sort of little weird twist, or, you know, I'll add kombucha to the sweet or something like that, you know, or I don't know. I love herbs. Herbs are my thing. Herbs, fresh herbs, dried herbs, herbal medicine, all of it is, I think I must have been a herbal medicine priestess or something in another life. I don't know.
Yeah. But what I'm hearing, so for people who are listening to this, you know, even with their cooking, just to start to think a little bit more about adding a little bit more herbs, maybe learning a little bit more about the herbs, adding a little bit more, you know, not everyone's going to be able to just do all of this all of a sudden, or they're not in your area, but they can start doing a little bit of this more, you know. So they might start making their own stock, or start, you know, their own broth, or they might start adding a few more herbs to things that they're doing and start experimenting with that. And just that sounds like a really nice place to start for people, to just add a bit more freshness, a bit more flavour and a bit more diversity in this sort of healing quality of the food that they're making.
Absolutely. I think the thing is look, identifying, you know, say you really like, for example, thyme, because I've mentioned that a couple of times, or basil. They all have medicinal properties anyway, inherently, in and of themselves. And then just, you know, focusing on where you can add more of these herbs into your meals, or if you are making a fresh, you know, even a vegetable stock or a vegetable stock paste, which is essentially just cooking lots and lots of different vegetables and adding different herbs when you're cooking it and then pureeing it up. And that actually is a fresh stock paste, so you don't need to use stock cubes anymore. And you add salt's a preservative, and also it's a flavour enhancer. And we do need good quality salts in our diet.
That was my next thing. Talk about a couple of examples of the good quality salts. I mean, I love good quality salt.
Well, I think the easiest ones to access are probably Himalayan salts, the rock salts from the Himalayas, and Celtic sea salts. Or in Australia, we have, you know, Murray River salts and things like that. And, I mean, they're not iodized, basically. So they are as they are in nature, and they're basically packaged, you know, harvested and packaged. And they, one, salt will enhance, as I said, flavour, and two, it will mineralise the food. And often you can just add salt to water if you are needing some of those minerals, you know. And I think people have been fed this thing for so long that salt is not good, but we do actually need salt in our body, and then we have, you know, a constitution of salt in our bloodstream. So that is one thing, and I think it's also too, salt lifts flavours of food. So if you're in a professional kitchen, if you're in a commercial kitchen, you know, it's used to actually enhance the food. It lifts the flavour profile. So by adding good salts and adding fresh herbs and using good quality water, we can't forget water. That's vital, that you're using filtered water in your cooking, and in your soaking and all of that sort of stuff. That already is just enough to get you on the road to adding some of that alchemy, you know. Another example that's simple to me is something like smoothies, for example, which are the go all over the world, is using herbal tea as one of your bases, you know. So if you have a herbal tea you really like, then like tulsi, like I was saying, which has got a strong kind of basil flavour, is you actually brew up some tea, cool it down, and just put it in a jar or a bottle in the fridge, and then when you have a smoothie, you add some of that to your smoothie. So there you go, you've already added some herbs, you know.
I have to say that my kids think that cordial is, you know, their tea with honey. That's what I give them, you know, and mint, fresh mint, you know, that's what I'll give them after school, you know, something nice and fruity, a fruity tea with some honey and some mint in it, and I'll brew that in the afternoon, and they'll, you know, have that after school with ice and absolutely love it. And then, you know, you're really enhancing the nutrients that you're giving them, aren't you, rather than whatever else they're going to come in and get some, you know, processed orange juice or something.
Well, that's right. I mean, yeah, you can, as long as you make it look like what they think it is that they want to have, I guess, then you can be imbuing them with really, you know, good quality and, again, high vibration things. So mint is a great one for kids because they understand that flavour. And honey.
And it grows easily. So as long as it's sunny and watered, they love growing
it. Exactly. And honey is, unless you're, you know, opposed to eating foods from animals, or you're allergic in some way. I mean, honey is full of nutrition. It's, you know, antimicrobial. It's just, it's got so many amazing enzymes. And, I mean, the bees are like the gift to the planet. So, you know, again, though, giving thanks to those bees for what they do for us when we're eating the products. But honey is a great thing to add. And then you add some soda water, or, you know, use a soda stream with filtered water or something like that. And the kids would never know, you know. And then they're getting this beautiful fresh food and beautiful fresh herbs and the medicine of that food, essentially. Because that's what it's about, food as medicine, you know, that whole
food extra. Be thy medicine and medicine be thy food, yeah.
Exactly, and that's what it needs to be, and that's what it always has been, you know, up until we sort of industrialized times came, and then now, you know, and it becomes just something to satiate your hunger as opposed to being our medicine.
Yeah, that's right. And tell us a bit more about the kombucha you were talking about. That, so, you know, and that going down that road of you know, fermenting and so you're growing the kombucha. I've got to pick some actually. I forgot to get it from my girlfriend yesterday. You grow the kombucha in your fridge, on your bench?
So kombucha is, it's become really, really popular these days in Australia at least, and I'm pretty sure in the States and all over the health and wellness space. So kombucha is actually a fermented tea. I think it started in Asia. Some say some of the strains of kombucha, like Jordan, started maybe in Tibet, and it's supposed to be quite holy, but it's actually a culture. It's called a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast, It looks like a mushroom, but it's actually nothing to do with mushrooms. It's actually just a scoby. And this culture is added to cool down black or green tea, which is the most viable home for it. And then you add sugar, and then people sort of freak out about that. But I found actually white sugar with as little minerals as possible, or incredibly raw sugar, i.e. not like a rapadura with lots of minerals, is its ideal ideal food. And basically this home of tea and sugar and the water, it creates this viable home, and then the culture starts to grow, but also give off its goodness. And in kombucha's case, it's a lot of gluconic acids and things like that. And it creates a probiotic food for us, basically. And as long as we take care of it and we feed it well with sugar and tea, the culture will keep growing, and it'll keep fermenting and giving us more kombucha. And you just keep, and then you can transfer it into bottles, and you can add fruits and herbs and all sorts of things, and that creates the flavour, which is called a second ferment. And then you sort of drink it. And you don't drink it by the gallon. You just, you know, really ideally just maybe half a glass a day. And for kids, you just add some soda water or some water to dilute it a little bit. And you can use it as your, you know, what people would traditionally use as sodas. This would be where you would drink it. And drink it with your meals. And there's also things like kefir, water kefir and dairy kefir, which are much more potent. And then we move into the things like kvass, which are all really famous from the Caucasus areas of the world, you know, like Russia and stuff, where they all ferment and they drink a lot of fermented beverages. And that's why they have so much longevity in those sort of blue zones, you know.
Yeah, that's right. And you mentioned that basically you're creating a diverse probiotic, which is what our gut needs to keep us healthy without going. I've talked more about the gut with the naturopathic herbalist previously, but you know, this is all really helping to bring us into true health, which as a society we've been a long way away from lately, haven't we?
Well, that's right, and I think this is why these things, while they've been around for a really long time, like you'll speak to people and like, oh yeah, we were doing kombucha back in the 70s kind of thing. It's just, you know, I think this has almost come about again, in at least here in Australia, as a result of the fact that there's so much gut issues, or so many inherent gut issues in health. Most of the illnesses, it's suggested, that exist, or the conditions of disease, are a result of some sort of gut dysbiosis or gut issue. And our gut is our second brain. The enteric system is a potent brain. And if it's not well, it will become out of balance and then create disease. So all of these different foods, especially potent ferments and cultured vegetables and things, they're all going to be assisting the gut to have the colony that it needs of good bacteria and yeast within it. It is suggested.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and the off the shelf, you know, probiotics, you know, the supermarket ones, a lot of them really don't have what we need, do they? Not like when you make it on your own bench.
Yeah, well, especially I think, I mean, not so much kombucha, I mean, potentially in my understanding, dairy, things like the dairy kefirs, which is a different culture, because they all have different strains of probiotic, you know, and bacteria that we need. And some people might actually have too many of one bacteria and that particular food might not suit them. But then if you really need to know that, you go and get your test done with naturopaths. But, excuse me, I think the ones on the shelf, if you need to take a specific probiotic, which would be advised by a naturopath or a good integrated doctor, you'd actually get the really high quality ones from the naturopath. But the over the shelf, I don't know how stable they are. But just the overall health, eating things like sauerkrauts and, as I said, beet kvass and things like that, which are quite simple and they're everywhere now and they're high quality and they're raw, which means they haven't been pasteurized. They're going to at least set you up and give you a good stage or a good platform for your body to be healing, you know. And it's, even if you're super healthy, it's never going to hurt to be introducing these foods. And you read so many wonderful reports of people just transforming their lives by simply adding fermented vegetables and fermented beverages to their diets, you know. And again, it's the frequency.
Right. Yeah, and there's also something else that kids love. They love, my daughter had a ginger bug on the bench and she treated it like a pet, you know, my little four-year-old.
Yeah,
she was
right.
Feeding it and, you know, checking it every day. And then we make ginger, you know, ginger beer or whatever out of it, and they drink it and they love it and they're so proud of themselves. And, you know, so it's almost like you can introduce almost like a little science experiment that's going on the bench. And, you know, so that the kids actually really love fermenting stuff.
Well, that's right. And it's just introducing them to them in a way that makes it so fun. And as you say, it's like an experiment. So they get to kind of be in the process from the beginning to the end. And then they get to drink the fruits of their labor, you know, which it speaks to what we were talking about earlier. And also, too, little do they know, it's also you know, introducing all these wonderful bacteria and probiotics into their system. So it's keeping them healthy. And
yeah, on so many levels.
Yeah, exactly. And it's light. Again, so again, frequency. So I sort of, when I teach fermenting, you know, a lot of my clients, they don't use the words frequency and vibration and stuff in their food. But I say to them, you know, before we give them the bottles that they're going to do their second ferment in, I get them to paint, you know, designs and write messages on the bottle. You know, that whole thing of, you know, frequency
messages
transmitted.
Messages from water.
Yeah. Exactly. And so they kind of look at me like, oh, you're crazy. But then they all get into it, you know, and they're writing designs and putting messages of love on their bottle. And it's again, it's just that whole thing. It's all intention. It's all energy. It's all traveling into that intention. And I've got clients who just, they just love creating their kombucha and their keepers. And I go to their houses and they're so good and they're so diligent. And it's such a wonderful thing. Again, it's that process of creating themselves and knowing that they've done it. And you save money. You don't have to go and buy these products. And in the kids' cases, they get to if they're drawing love hearts on the jars of the ginger bug, it's just another little seed that you're planting in their minds around these sort of ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing you mentioned when you were talking about your Nourish and Nurture program is, you know, it's not one course, it's not two courses, it's four courses. Talk to us a little bit about that, because I think that's something else that's really lost as well. And I think it's another reason people sort of get tired of food, you know, one big bowl of spaghetti bolognese, you know, whereas, you know, traditionally, you know, food was definitely brought out in, you know, many, many varieties over the one meal. So talk to us the importance of, you know, starters, and they're called appetizers for a reason. That's what I tell my kids.
Yeah, and in America, I think the starter is called the appetizer. I should know. I work on yachts for years. But, the reason I do the three things is, for variety and for different flavors. So it's the sort of having a bit of a traveling journey if they sit down and eat those three courses. And then I also offer now a gluten-free kind of sprouted buckwheat herb bread as well. And then ghee and like cereal if they want, you know, like a granola, a sprouted buckwheat granola as well. But I think it's important from a flavor point of view. And again, if they do eat the three courses in the one sitting, it's actually doing that. It's sitting down and spending time, you know, and because they're not having to prepare it, there isn't that stress. So all they simply have to do is reheat it gently in a pan on the stove, and then they get to sort of indulge, or not even indulge, just enjoy this process of different flavors and different textures, you know.
And I know I was just going to say, my mum never served up a meal that didn't start with soup or something beforehand. And it doesn't have to be, you know, if you make at home a batch of soup and you put it into portions in the freezer, then you can, you know, have a little, it gives you a lot more variety of nutrients with each meal as well. Have you got any advice for like that journey of what you would put together as far as, you know, a starter and a main course and a dessert? Is there some sort of method to that madness, or we just need to experiment?
Gosh, yeah, I think soups are really good because soups can travel across all of the year. And in my case, it's because they're kind of easy to package and you can freeze them. So, yeah, I think like what you said, like, you know, look at what the local ingredients are. So, as I said this week, at the moment, broccoli is going out of season. So it's a mad dash to eat all the broccoli that we can get. And broccoli is a true superfood. And so go, okay, well, there's some vegetables. I like that vegetable. Go onto Google and just Google around and find a recipe that you like. God loves Google for this.
Don't skip the herbs.
Or just add more herbs. And what you can actually do, if there's a herb that you really, really love, like, for example, let's just say parsley, then you can get some good olive oil, chuck the parsley in the blender with some olive oil and puree that up, and you basically create a very simple herb oil. And then you add the herb oil at the end. So you just have that bottle there. That's your herb oil for the week, and you can put on everything, or you can do a mixture of herbs. So that's simple. And then add herbs to the soup, and as you said, then freeze it in portions. And things that haven't got any meat-based products or any dairy are going to last a long time. You know, they're not going to be gone overnight. So they'll sustain okay in the fridge. If you have a cryovacing device, then that's even better. And then with the main, it's that whole thing of big batch cooking, you know. Again, like I think our grandmothers and mothers used to do, is just identifying a couple of dishes that you might like, and you can always add a protein at the end, you know, a piece of chicken on the side or a piece of meat or a slow-cooked meat or whatever. But just cook a batch of something in a big pan or whatever, and then you can either portion it down, I guess, if you like, but that's kind of... then you've got a couple of courses for the week, and even for a couple of days, you could have it at the beginning and at the end, you know, and that's one day that's gone, two meals that you don't have to worry about. And then with the sweet, as I said, I generally make raw because it translates quite well for this kind of service, but it's easy to, create like in a loaf pan or even in a spring form cake pan, you know, a base with some dates and some figs and some nuts and coconut or something, and then a nice filling, puree up some fruit and some, I guess, more nuts and coconut, and then slice it up and then put it in the freezer. And what my clients I've found do is that they actually, when I give them the little treats, they say that they cut them even smaller and they put them into a bowl in the freezer. And when they just want a little hit of something nice and clean and sweet, then they just have a piece. And so it's not overload of that sort of food. So it becomes I don't like the word treat actually, but it becomes a sweet morsel. And out of interest, to just a segue, Ayurvedically, which is the Indian science of food and healing, in Ayurveda, you actually eat the sweet first.
Right.
They believe that it's better for your system and digestion to actually have the sweet before you have the savoury. So I think I say to people, have the sweet and then the savoury, then the sweet again.
Nice. Well, if you're filling it up with all this beautiful food, you can sort of let go a lot of the sweet's a bad thing, can't you?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that the whole thing of good and bad is it's a little bit overused, and it's just a shaming kind of mechanism. I guess it sort of speaks to, again, what you're saying about mindfulness. If you're going to eat McDonald's or, Cadbury's, then just bless it. Say, thank you very much. You know, this is the best I could do today. And do it with some good energy and then just eat it. It's actually what I say to people, not that I'm encouraging McDonald's or Cadbury's. But if you're eating whole foods and whole food sweeteners and dates and things like that, and unless you've got some serious condition or FODMAPs or any of those sort of things, then just enjoy it. I mean, we're here to live a tactile, life, to live a life of experience and then to enjoy. So, I use coconut syrup and coconut sugar and maple syrup and dates and things like that and fruits to sweeten the dessert portion of the meals or any of the stuff that I eat. And it's whole food. It hits your system in a better way. And it also satiates that flavour. But also, too, we actually need sweetness. You know, it's one of the five flavors, and we need sweetness in our lives, and we do need sugars in some form for our brains. That's how I understand it.
Yeah, so. It's the overprocessed that's been the problem, probably more than anything.
That's right, exactly. So when you're not eating lots of sodas and lots of processed food, you actually, and then just eating whole foods in their whole form, and then whole food sweeteners, your body will process it in a different way. And again, if you're eating it with, you know, love and with awareness, it's all going to affect your system in a different way. And it sounds, I suppose, a little bit kind of hippie, but I think it's true. And I see it anecdotally all the time that is the case. So so I think for people to ease up and small steps, you know, if you're eating a lot of processed food and a lot of white food, then just start just easing things out. It's not about taking everything out and adding all this new stuff, just small steps, you know, and a year later or a couple of years later, you'd be like, oh my God, my diet and my whole way of eating is transformed. And this is what I'm here to do, help people do, you know.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the yoga philosophy, you know, for me, replacing bad habits or habits that aren't serving you with habits that are serving you. So if you can start just adding a little bit of extra herbs and buying a little bit extra cleaner food, being a bit more aware of what's seasonal and what's not, and then, you know, replacing some of the processed foods with clean, nourishing foods. And as you said, you look back 12 months later and you won't believe the changes that are in your life. So we're going to wrap it up in a second, but I just want to go through. So you sell the superfood blend on your website, and what areas do you supply to from your website?
Oh, yeah, right. We haven't talked about the superfood. Wow, this has gone quickly. We haven't talked about
the superfood blend. I know, told you.
yeah, my superfood blend, which is algae and bee pollen and other wonderful ingredients, is available online via my website, online via a few other stockists, which is on my website, and then in New South Wales predominantly, Victoria, Queensland, and one stockist in Adelaide, and it can be shipped internationally, especially with the American dollar so strong, and it's awesome. Some people say it's one of the best that they've ever tasted or ever used, some of the detox people that I know, detox experts. So, yeah, and it's totally my gift to the planet. Like, I'm just a conduit for this product, and I've seen it make really wonderful changes in people's lives and in my own life. So it's a simple and effective way to work towards a kind of cleaner diet.
Yeah, it's part of my morning routine, and it's in. I've got the Rise and Shine morning routine online course, and your shot of super greens in your smoothie or your juice or your water in the morning is part of that routine for me. So I'm really loving it. So if people are in an area where they can't access your product, what do they need to look for? They're looking at their health food shop or the supermarket shelves. What are we looking for in a good one?
In a good greens product, in America, I think the one that I would most recommend that is probably most well known is called Vitamineral Greens. And that's the one that my colleagues and mentors would use. But I would just make sure if you're going to use chlorella that the chlorella is broken cell wall. Obviously organic, and spirulina as well, that just that they're organic. You can't necessarily see where the sourcing is from. The algae I use are freshwater, so they're grown, they're farmed, which most are. I would say that, you know, a good health food store with a naturopath will generally know which the better brands are. There isn't any really strictly raw algae, as far as I know, in Australia, but I may be wrong. But just organic, and I would ask the person at the store, or drop me a line if you have a query about one particular product. And I think the thing with spirulina and chlorella, broken cell chlorella, is that they hit your system immediately. So they don't need to be in overcomplicated additions to smoothie, like really complicated smoothies, just simple fruit-based, some herbs or a good juice or water or some kombucha or something like that. And it will go into your system quite quickly. And it's the same with bee pollen. Bee pollen's a really wonderful thing if you're not in any way allergic to bees. because it's just full of enzymes and it's high in protein. They're all high in protein, which means it's affected very, very quickly as well because they're digested straight away, you know. So keep it simple. And, ask the person in the store, depending on what part of the world you're in, would be my advice because they will generally be tuned in to the local blends. I know there's a blend in the UK that's just come out called Alchemy Super Blends, and it looks like it's got some really good ingredients in it. And nothing too complicated. I have eight ingredients, mostly strongly the first three. So something that's just not overly complicated. So then it's simple. Mm. Keep it simple. Keep it simple.
Yeah, that's a good philosophy for life, isn't it? So you've got your Nourished and Nurtured weekly meal delivery service, which I might have to look into myself to get me back on the road. But you also do private workshops and run workshops. And you have your Super Green superfood blend on sale on the website. Your blog and recipes, all sorts of stuff for people to go and check what you do at theholisticchef.com.au. I just want to thank you so much for giving us the time and giving us so many tips and ideas and inspiration to really clean up our act with our food.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. And we didn't even touch on the shamanism, so... Wow.
No, we didn't. That will be another, we'll do another hour.
Thank you.
You've mentioned it now, so we have to talk about it for a couple of minutes.
Oh, God.
Which is really, a food is a lot about that, isn't it? So just give us a quick rundown on what that means to you in regards to, you know, your life.
So for me, the path that I'm particularly resonant with is called the Path of the Red Road or the Native American traditions. And currently the teachers I work with are Lakota Sioux. So for me, what I like the most about the Native American and the Indigenous traditions from the Americas and South America is their connection to nature. And again, it goes back to what we spoke about in the beginning with plants and gardens and food. And their absolute... observance and reverence for nature, and that everything kind of boils down to that. And so for me, it's a path that you walk in a really connected way. So you're aware of the trees, you're aware of the sun, you're aware of the ocean, you're aware of the earth, and everything comes down to Mother Earth, you know, and to the grandfather sun in their case. And so for me, when they work with food, it's all to do with constantly giving gratitude as well. So it's all really the same themes that we were talking about. And for me, I'm part of the Lakota tradition currently, and I am I'm a medicine woman in training, so I'm going to beginning to pour Sweat Lodge for women soon, which is a ceremonial purification ceremony. And I'm only going to be pouring with women. And again, it's introducing people just to awareness, more awareness of nature and really sitting in nature and having a connection, you know, like literally hugging trees, that kind of thing, because they will actually recalibrate your frequency and recalibrate your energies and stuff when you stand on the earth with bare feet and you touch the trees and all that sort of thing. It's a path that I just love because it's a really empowering path. And I love working with women. And then also, too, introducing the herbs and the foods of these cultures, which is also what part of my product is about, because a lot of these are Indigenous products and come from other cultures, like chia is Mexican and, you know, maca is Peruvian and Bolivia, and spirulina is actually from the Aztecs, from the Mexicans, so, and mesquite is from the Native Americans. So they have a strong reverence and understanding of how food is an alchemy and how to work with it for optimum results, basically. And they're all about empowering us two-leggeds, as they call us. So for me, it's a wonderful, wonderful way of life. And I'm starting to run small lodge retreats for women now, so I'm really excited to be able to bring that and the food together. Some of the other healing modalities that I'm able to do.
That sounds awesome, and it makes it sound like when you were talking about where all the different ingredients from, it's a global healing in that packet.
That's right, and it's also honouring these traditions, you know. So the superfoods in my particular blend aren't things that we can buy in our own gardens or grow in our own gardens. They're actually things that come from other parts of the world because of their inherent healing abilities or why they've been used. And my current teacher, he's Peruvian, and he's like Maka is, he's like, that is powerful, Shakti. You know, like he's really encourages that we use Maka. So, yeah, so thank you for letting me share that. I really am grateful.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure. And it really ties up everything that we were saying throughout the hour beautifully, I think. So I'll let you go there. So it's the holisticchef.com.au. You can follow this program and other programs on empoweringmotherhoodradio.com. You can just subscribe to the iTunes or, you know, on your podcast app on your phone or whichever way you prefer to listen. And any questions, you can direct them straight to Shakti or into our Facebook group, Empowering Motherhood Support Network. And look forward to maybe talking to you again. I think we could easily get another hour out of ourselves.
I'm sure we could. Thank you so much, Tara, and many blessings to everybody. And may you all walk in grace and beauty and peace and joy always.
Oh, thank you. And to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Aho.
This is the EWN Radio Network.